welcome to another edition of Guide to Financial Peace. This is Novia's Money Guy, Todd Strobel, and we're heading towards the holiday July 4th weekend here and got our resident expert in the house, best-selling author Kim Butler. How are you, Kim?
Very fine, Todd. We actually had a little early July 4th trip this last weekend. We went camping. Always a good thing to do before the July 4th crowds.
That makes total sense to me. For a lot of years, I would spend the 4th of July in Canada just because it was a good time to be there. So,
absolutely. So who can we help today?
Awesome. Well, I think one of the things that we're going to explore today is just talking about this idea of the long-term cost of habits. And I guess, you know, maybe we could talk about good habits as well as bad habits, but why don't we start first, and to you, what is a habit?
Oh, a habit is something that we do consistently. Doesn't have to mean every day, but definitely on a consistent basis. And to me, our habits are what define our lives. They are what make up our character, they're what make up our finances, they're what make up our work environment, and I just love this idea. I've been talking to our clients quite a bit about it lately as it relates to sharing with their children. And, you know, people always want to pass things on. They talk about passing on money, and a lot of people feel like, wow, I don't have any money to pass on. You may not, but you absolutely have habits to pass on. And good habits can fill our days so that there's no room for bad habits, and it completely eliminates the need for discipline.
Wow. Okay, so habits eliminate the need for discipline. And I guess when I think about habits, I think of shortcuts, meaning that so much of our life requires our conscious attention that when we're able to create a habit, whether it's good or bad, it's a subconscious shortcut. So we can do this without mental effort because it's almost part of our programming. That safe to say?
Yes, absolutely. And shortcuts and automation and efficiency, I mean, we look for those things in a business. We look for them in our lives as well.
Got it. So back to this concept of habit eliminate the need for discipline. I guess I need a little more information on that.
Well, think about this. You know, everybody says, gosh, I need to be more disciplined about what I eat, or I need to be more disciplined about working out, or I need to be more disciplined about saving money. And I disagree. I think that if you're in the habit of working out, if you're in the habit of saving money, if you're in the habit of eating properly, then there is no need for discipline. And now I see why you're confused. It's not that there's no need for it. It is that the habit does the job of the disciplining, but because it's a habit, it's an automatic thing that we do, so we don't even really think about it. And I don't know about you, but habit sounds a lot more fun to me than discipline does.
Got it. So, you know, picture the proverbial exercise like what you're talking about. You know, everybody knows that when they go back to the gym, whether it's the first week or the first month, I don't know, as I get older, that time period seems to get longer and longer, where it's just not fun because my muscles haven't been exercised and it's sore and it's not part of my routine. But then, you know, once I get past that and it just becomes part of what I do every day, then I actually start looking forward to it, not trying to have to consciously argue with myself to why I should be there or should not be there.
Exactly. And that habit has such good long-term benefits. And so that's why we want to have that in our lives so that we are getting not only the benefits that we get today, but the benefits of all of the time, literally a lot of them for the rest of our lives.
And I was doing some research on this just before we got on the show, and that's one of the things that you know, when we look at the long-term cost of anything, one of the determining factors is, one, the degree that the habit either positively or negatively impacts our life multiplied by the remaining time period of our lives. So changing habits earlier has a greater long-term effect than changing them later.
Absolutely. And again, the earlier we get into those habits, the more they're going to have a larger and longer impact. And if we'll just focus on having 100% of our days filled with good habits, then there's not a need to have discipline to get rid of the bad habits. We always want to be focusing on what we want, not what we don't want. And so if you're in the good habit of eating healthy food, as an example, then you're going to get the results of that habit. If you're in the not-so-good habit of eating not-so-good food, you're going to get the results of that. So you focus as an individual on what you want, and you get what you focus on. So if you focus on filling your life, filling your days with eating good food, you're going to get those good results. Whereas if you focus on trying to get rid of the bad food, your focus is on the bad food, so you're going to end up getting those results. It's like saying to a kid, don't run. Well, what does he hear? He hears run. He doesn't hear the word don't. So as adults, we want to focus on what we want.
And I'm thinking back to the child issues, too. You know, I'm thinking in some of my older children, you know, most of their needs, I guess you would say, were taken care of by me as a parent. So any time that I gave them money or they received money, you know, pretty much the message that I sent to them was, I want you to take this money and enjoy it because I'm taking care of your needs. Go service this with your wants. And then when those, you know, when they go out and start working and the paychecks come in, how could that money feel any differently?
Wow, that's a huge insight. Yes, that's very, very true. So no wonder a lot of our kids are messed up these days because we've been installing that habit.
Yeah, not about saving, not about saving for something that they need, but about, wow, how can I get the most enjoyment out of these dollars because that's the habit I've built.
That's right. And health habits, saving habits, all of those kinds of things take building, and they take reinforcing, and they do take sometimes climbing back on the wagon. I mean, I've done it just as much as anybody else has. I know how to eat. Every now and then I'll go through a 2 or 3 week period, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm way out of whack. So it takes a little work to get that habit back, but once the habit of good eating is back, then it's easy to stay with it.
Yep, soda. I went probably 7 or 8 years without drinking any soda at all. And then all of a sudden I started having a Coca-Cola here and a Coca-Cola there, and now I'm buying them by the 24 packs, and it's like, oh, this is bad.
Yep, it does catch up with you for sure. So
super.
What
well,
about
today
the,
we wanted to really...
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. No, I was going to say, so today we really wanted to kind of... you know, get the idea of this. I think you had mentioned something called, is it the lifetime compound interest curve or something? Really what we're talking about here is the multiplication effect of time on a habit, correct? Is it sort of the same thing?
That is correct. I love it. So you're tying in an individual's lifetime compound interest curve that literally starts the day they were born and ends the day they die, and they only have one of them, with all of the physical, social, emotional types of habits that we can have, and our human lifetime compound health curve, or our compound, oh, this is such a great analogy, our compound social benefit curve, or what have you. You are so right on track.
Exactly. Let me give you an example of this that I think will serve, because sometimes I think it's interesting how these things come back and smack us and remind us of this. My wife works for one of the major airlines, and they don't pay a lot of money, but the big thing is that people work there because you get to fly anywhere in the world for free. Now, she was doing a interview with someone who was just hired, and it's like their 6 month interview or whatever. She's a manager there, and she was asking them, you know, how are you enjoying your flight benefits? Well, The individual is 375-plus pounds and not all that tall of an individual, and he really can't participate in that because he can't fit in an airplane seat. So can you imagine that, I mean, you know, here, this lifetime of choices, you know, you now have the ability to, you know, go to London, go to Paris, go to Cairo, anywhere you want to go, and now these small decisions have cost you from being able to take advantage of that, and now his wife and kids have to decide whether they want to go do it without him.
Wow. That's sad, and that's all habit. Barring he's got some medical issues that he needs to deal with, that is habit, a lifetime of habit, and it's not going to be easy to correct that. And so you're right. What kind of long-term impact does that have on his family life, on his ability to expand his horizons, on his own feeling of self-worth and capability? That is a toughie.
And the second part of the equation is that, you know, in order to advance in the career path, they use the airlines a lot too. I mean, literally for these people, if you're in management, it's not unusual to just go to Atlanta for a meeting and come back because
right.
Planes. I mean, that's, you know, this is like getting on a bus. So he can't really participate in the fast track career-wise either. And that was what was really bothering him. He's like, you know, I can't participate with my family, and now I can't, you know, I'm afraid that if I was offered a promotion that required me to do meetings, I can't even do the meeting. So, I mean, it's just interesting. This example, I just heard about it this morning, and then I'm thinking about it now of, you know, what's the price on that relationship-wise? What's the price on that physically? What's the price on that financially as far as health costs? What's the price on that financially as far as the promotions that you would decline because it's not practical?
Yep. And really, in all of those cases, with a little bit of research, you could put some monetary value on those costs. And for some people, that might be motivating enough to get them to change. Other people are not as motivated by money. Okay, fine. Maybe it wouldn't be helpful in getting them to change. But it would be interesting to me to see what the monetary harm long-term of that habit had been. And you calculate it by not only adding up the actual cost. So let's just take a simple one. Okay, so he's made some habit choices about health. He cannot travel for his career. So let's say that costs him a $20,000 raise every 5 years for the next, say, 20 years. And so we could add up all those numbers. But there's an important missing element in that calculation, and that is the simple time value of money. And this is where opportunity cost comes in. So not only is it 20 grand every 5 years, times four for the period of time that I was speaking of, 20 years, but it's that dollar figure at interest. And when we look at opportunity cost, we do not stop looking at it at the end of the time. In other words, opportunity cost goes on literally until the day that we die. So it's not just the 20 grand for the four periods, it's the 20 grand at, say, 5% for the rest of his life. And it would be an astronomical number, and it would be very interesting to see if that kind of thing could help somebody add good habits to his life. That's the main point I want to get across is, okay, if we've got some issues, we need to take the opposite of those issues and add good habits to our life and let those good habits fill up our space, literally, physically, financially, emotionally, socially, so that there's no more room for the bad habit.
This particular conversation just it impacts me because it's I had a similar situation that happened to me, in that I was in pretty much that exact same situation. And in my particular case, I actually had somebody come to me one time and they argued this with me, and they said, well, do you know that because of your weight, you will probably live, let's say, 20 less years. And I said, well, you know, in the religion that I belong to, you know, you kind of leave God, you're separated from God, you go back to God. So the quicker you get back there, kind of the better off you are, right? So that argument didn't work. And then the second argument was, is, well, you know, doesn't it impact your ability to earn an income? And I said, well, you know, I have a multiple six-figure income. I don't see where I'm getting hurt anything. And, you know, sometimes I would tell people, if anybody asks, why are you so fat? I would just arrogantly tell them because I can afford it, which is not a good attitude. But then somebody asked me this, and they said, can you honestly tell me that you are getting the fullest experience out of this life and fully impacting the people in your life that you've been called to serve because of the restrictions that you have with your weight, both in terms of energy and, you know, just whatever the limitations are? And that was the one that I couldn't answer, and that was the one that resulted in me losing 130 pounds. So it's not always the same answer for everybody, but it is looking at that cost.
Well, what a cool story, Todd. Thanks for sharing that, and I know you have at other times, but it's so valuable when people realize that they're not alone and that they can pick up on stories like that to benefit themselves, because these habits that we install in our lives are sneaky. And you didn't get to that weight overnight, and of course you didn't get rid of it overnight either. And the same is true with our money. We don't get to be wealthy overnight. Most people will take a lifetime of effort to get wealthy. Now, everybody knows the occasional story that's not like that, but getting wealthy for most people is just as simple as a habit, and it's actually saving consistently that gets them wealthy. It's not the rate of return that they earn at all. We have a really fun calculator that we use in our practice called the Maximum Financial Potential, and it takes a look at somebody and says, okay, you have 30 years of work, and you earn $100,000 or whatever your number is, and you have a maximum potential of getting to this net worth. But everything in your life stops you from that. The taxes that you pay, your lifestyle, the expenses that you have, the interest that goes away to the various institutions. And so your typical saver, which is down to about 2% of their income, according to statistics in America, is going to end up with this tiny little amount of money left over at the end of the day. Well, it's very interesting to play with that calculator and change the interest rate that people earn on their investments, because that's what everybody thinks they've got to do, is find better investments. And changing the interest rates has a small impact on their overall wealth. But changing the savings, in other words, adjusting habits so that they don't pay as much tax, adjusting habits so that they pay less interest to the various financial institutions when they have to borrow, adjusting habits so that they can save a little bit more money, has a drastic impact on building their wealth. So it's the amount of money that we save, which is totally a habit, not the interest rate that we earn on that money, that contributes to our financial health, or our net worth, if you will.
Perfect. And you know, one of the things that you touched on was the amount of tax that you pay is another area that we can focus on. And I had another friend of mine who said, if you think the government taxes are high, what would you estimate your ignorance tax to be? And I said, well, you know, what is that? And he said, well, briefly, could you just tell me what you don't know? And think about that question. How do you answer that?
Not easily.
How many times is it what we don't know? I mean, I would guarantee you that in most cases, it's what we don't know far exceeds costing us than what we do know. And when we talk about this whole financial conversation, we've just decided to be intentionally ignorant, I think, sometimes. And, you know, that ignorance tax is huge by not understanding the way money in the world works. You have little chance of success. And that's really sad because that's something that's not that hard to fix.
Well, and this issue of ignorance is true in all areas. It's ignorance about good habits, too. I mean, there's so many people still that need help to know how to eat properly. There's so many people that need help to know how to save and to have good relationships. But that is a beautiful thing about the internet today. Even just Blog Talk Radio, you can get answers to all of these types of strategies as to habits that will work for you. And that's a really important thing, is to find a habit that works for you, because it's got to be a habit. It's got to be automated. It's got to be something that you can do without a whole lot of thought, and something that feels like it's fitting you. Otherwise, you won't do it. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, somebody, I can't remember, I guess it's been about 6 or 7 years ago, right when digital books were first coming out. And I think I probably bought one of the first Kindles. I think I'm on my third or fourth one now. But, the idea that if you just read 5 pages, or Kindles are kind of smaller, so there aren't really 5 full pages, so maybe 10 pages or 5 minutes or 10 minutes every single day on a particular subject. I mean, I tend to read a lot of financial books because that's what interests me, the amount of knowledge that you could accumulate. And by just having, you know, at the time when they said this, a lot of people would take a physical book, like preferably a paperback book. I don't think I could cut up a real book, but, and just pull chunks of it out so that you had it with you. Well, now we can have a Kindle app on our cell phone. We can have a Kindle app on our computer. It's so easy to take those little blocks of time when you're standing in line at the bank. For some reason, my bank just, you know, if they don't make you wait 10 minutes, they just don't feel like they've done their job. So that 10 minutes can all of a sudden be useful.
Absolutely. Well, and when we are spending our time wisely like that, it tends to cut out things that we might spend our time on not so wisely. I was talking with my 17-year-old son. He is in line for a new phone. So he's not had a smartphone yet, and he's ready to get one, and having a big debate with himself because he said, I don't want to be like all my buddies. Every chance they get, they're pulling out their iPhone and playing video games. I don't want to get stuck in that. And he almost was not wanting to have the smartphone because he didn't want to get sucked into that video game habit every 10 minutes of spare time that he has. And so I just shared with him, well, just pick up another habit. Every 10 minutes you have, you know, grab a book that's important to you. It could be the Bible. It could be the book that you're reading for fun, even. I mean, almost anything, I think one could argue, would be an improvement. Now, I'm not saying that video games aren't great. We've had awesome radio shows about the really cool aspects of video gaming. But the little ones that you're spending 5 and 10 minutes on, I think, could be argued. How is your habit around waiting time? When you have to wait at a doctor's office, when you have to wait at the bank, when you have to wait in the grocery store line, whatever it is, what is your habit? And I know my habit is to be grateful. I literally stand there and tick off things that I'm grateful for. But if your habit is to go to your phone, then what's your next habit? What on the phone do you go to? And what is the long-term aspect of that habit?
I'm a big fan of Bluetooth wireless headsets, and Audible, AUDIBLE, is an audio bookstore. And the phones, actually right now, in between phone calls, will automatically shift you back to where your place was in the book, play, until you dial the next call, or the next call comes in, or I am an iPhone fan, so I actually just talk to my phone, and I say, Siri, call Kim Butler. we can even automate that so that those times are your audiobooks just kick right in and you're listening to them and you don't even have to pay attention. It'll answer the next phone call when it comes in.
Absolutely. And there really is a lot of good that you can get in those 5 and 10 minute snippets instead of having them wasted. So as we're wrapping up here, let's think about some good habits. Let's maybe, you want to create a list of some good habits that we could help people fulfill their lives with so they get the long-term benefits and they're not having opportunity cost of the bad habits. So you started with a great one at audibles.com, and I like to add mine to the list of, and I'll kind of keep track of our little list here so we can have it on the blog, just a habit of what to do when you have 10 extra minutes. And it's literally mentally, or you could do it in written form, a gratitude list. So we've got audibles.com. We've got a gratitude list. What else you want to throw on there?
And just so you know, on the gratitude list, there are actually programs out there that will actually send you things to be grateful for to remind you during the day if you need help.
I love it. There is an app for everything, isn't there?
Just about. So I would say, you know, we'll look at physical. You know, what is something that you can do physically, whether that's, you know, taking the stairs or, you know, trying to get those little bits of exercise in. I know there's a new company out called Fitbit, F-I-T-B-I-T. They even sell them in Target. We're not a paid spokesman for them. But it will track your calories. It will track your exercise and even track your sleep patterns through the little device and your phone, and I think they're like $50.
Love it. Boy, those prices are coming down big time. So my physical habit, I love that you're coming up with the technical ones all the time, is stretching. I just, anywhere, and it looks kind of funny every now and then in public, but I don't care. I will put my arms up, stretch side to side, backwards. We spend way too much time sitting hunched forward, so I'm constantly stretching backwards. Let's do an eating one. What's your ideas for, like, how'd you get out of that Coke thing?
Well, I'm still in it, actually, but I am just trying to consciously make
Oh, you mean you're human?
I mean, yeah, the sad part about that is I mean, you know, I actually crazy things. I mean, you know, I can see McDonald's out my window, and, you know, I'm sitting here thinking right now, well, you know, before my next appointment, I could walk over there and back.
How funny.
So again, it's multiplying the long-term effects, you know. I mean, when you have, you know, faced the health problems that my weight, even though the weight is gone, I think my physical challenges are still there just from, you know, being that big for so long and realizing that, you know, that started somewhere. I wasn't born at that weight, obviously. And I wasn't a lot taller back then either. So, I've got to stop it somewhere, and I think that's the big thing, is just paying attention to that.
Well, so here's one for you. Put a pitcher of water, a pitcher, P-I-T-C-H-E-R, of water on your desk, and just make sure that by noon you have, so this would be like a two-quart pitcher, ideally. Even one quart is a good start. By noon, you've drunk all of it, and then you refill it at lunch, and you work on drinking the rest of it before you go home. That one action, that one habit will make such a drastic difference in people's lives. Nobody gets enough water. It's very, very hard to get enough water in our bodies. But if we have our 8-ounce glass and our 1 or 2 quart pitcher, start with one, don't be overwhelmed, and get that done by lunch and then again by dinner and then go to 2 quarts or 1 quart filled 4 times, obviously, it's just invaluable. And yes, the first couple of weeks you'll spend a lot of time in the restroom, but after that your body gets used to it, and there's so much good in the flow of water in our bodies. And it's the same thing as the flow of money. We've talked about it all the time, how money needs to keep moving, and it does need to do that in our personal economies. The exact same water needs to be doing that in our physical economies, if you will, stretching my analogy here a tad. And the benefits of that and that habit, that consistent water always going in, it'll fill your life so much that the Coke thing will just slide off the table. There won't be any room for it.
Awesome. Well, we're down to our last 10 seconds. Once again, this is Guide to Financial Peace with No BS Money Guy Todd Strobel and our resident expert Kim Butler saying take care. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.